So I'm Jacob McDaniel. I work for Colorado State University, working with biosolids management, and we're starting to do a lot more work with the phosphorus aspect of biosolids management. And how do we control the availability of phosphorus, and what controls it, and how does that affect either environmental impacts or affect the ability for plants to be able to use that phosphorus for their uptake. So what we're talking about today is part of a larger study that we're working on how does phosphorus cycle in the soil under different conditions. So the part that I chose to go with today is on under irrigated conditions, especially, so these are center pivots under corn irrigation. And so I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Greg Butters and Dr. Ken Barbrick, who've been helping as well with this work. So a little bit about the introduction for this particular component of the study we're working on and why we're interested in it is there's been a lot of work that's been done looking at the kinetics of phosphorus transformation and how phosphorus cycles and transforms between different forms, which would affect its availability for environmental impacts or for plant uptake, where it's looked at small time scales, so from either minutes to hours or maybe out to a day. There's also work that's looked at long-term effects. So if we have cropping systems where we change over, how does the phosphorus dynamics change after multiple years of cropping systems? And one of the areas, especially in our portion of the country, in the Western United States, where we tend to have a little bit different soils than we do in the Southeast, where a lot of the phosphorus work is concentrated, is how does the phosphorus change even within one growing season? And so does the phosphorus go between different pools, and is that difference between different soils? So looking at how is it different between soils that have high clays versus high sands in different areas where biosolids are being applied from the municipalities. So a little bit about the methods and materials for how we set up this study in order to look at this. So what we had was we chose four field sites that each of these field sites contained two soil series. So what we were trying to do was to get some variation in soil types and to be able to compare them with each other. So what we had for our four fields that we chose, which were center pivot irrigation systems for corn, each of the soils, or each of the fields contained two soils. So we have these fields one and two contained our high clay textured soils, and then fields three and four contained high sand soils. So our clay soils were either clays or clay loams, that's what they classified as. And then our sandy soils, one was a loamy sand and one's a sandy loam. So we're very high in sand to have that large difference between the two texture-wise. We went out to each of these sites and we would collect four composite samples within each soil type, within each field. And we did this at four different sampling times, so starting in June and going through November. Prior to our initial sampling, all these fields had been amended with biosolids for their nitrogen fertilizer need. Based on the agronomic need for nitrogen. And all these sites have had a history of at least 5 years of application of biosolids in full commercial production. So a little bit about the actual soils themselves and some of the variations with it. The samples that we collected were from the top 20 centimeters or top 8 inches of the soil. And they showed that they're either neutral or just slightly acidic. And one of the things to keep in mind with these is that surface layer, that plow horizon for these soils, tends to become slightly acidic. But right below this layer, down in our soil profile, we will start in the clay soils having calcium carbonate present and being much more basic fairly quickly. The other thing to point out for the differences between them, if I can get the mouse to work, is the difference in iron concentration between our clay soils and our sandy soils. And then also... the CEC, where we have the higher CEC with our clay soils as opposed to our sandy or textured soils. So what we did was once we collected these samples, we brought them back to the lab and fractionated them into the different forms of metal-associated phosphorus. So we had soluble iron and aluminum bound, occluded, which again is the encapsulated iron bound phosphorus, and then calcium bound. We also looked at some of the organic fractions, so we fractionated organically to determine the amounts in different pools. So we had labile, microbial, moderately labile, fulvic and humic acids, and then non-labile organic phosphorus. As far as statistical analysis, one of the things that I think is important to point out is that one of the things with our data set that we had was having the repeated measures and having those sampling times that were over time. We needed to make sure that we were taking into account that samples closer together have a different correlation than samples further apart, and made sure we took that into our statistical analysis as we were doing it, and did run it the analysis both ways just to see if it mattered, and it did have a large effect on some of the conclusions that we could draw from our study. The other thing that we had ended up doing was we analyzed each of the soils independently of each other instead of using soil as an effect, and did it as comparing the trends, mainly due to there were some large differences that we saw in the properties of the soils themselves and a lot of other interactions that were taking place which were complicating trying to explain what was taking place within our data set. And again, like the normal checks for normality and variance, and those were transformations were used, but all the data we're going to present will be non-transformed data. The other challenge we came into is some of the data analysis, and one of the things we had to work through was these sites being production sites and having different histories of previous management and different rates of biosolids being applied and lifetime application rates. What we were seeing was that we started at different points with these different sites. Some of the sites there had had 5 years of applications, and a couple of our other sites had been applied to for almost 10 years. And that difference in application for where we were starting with our initial concentrations of phosphorus was vastly different. So what we did was we used a percentage basis for the different fractions where we summed up the fractions and then put on a percentage basis to help to correct for that different total amount and looked at then the distribution between the pools and if that distribution stayed constant across our treatments. So for the results, so I'm not going to go into all the fractions. We try to pick out a few of them to talk about that would tell a better story or a concise story. So one of the things that we did as well on all of our sites or all of our soil samples was analyze them for Olsen extractable phosphorus. So this is the soil test value that our producers use for determining their rates of phosphorus need if they were going to use commercial inorganic fertilizers as opposed to biosolids. And one of the things that we saw that was interesting was that our over the course of our study, our sandier textured soils, which are in these two columns here, tended to be more constant across our growing season, saw less fluctuation. As opposed to our fine textured soils, we tended to see more variation taking place with this Olsen extractable phosphorus pool. So when we actually start looking at the different pools of phosphorus that we have in our system, what we're going to see here for the rest of these plots are all going to have the same setup as far as structurally for the data being presented, where we're going to have the percentage of whichever pool we're looking at the time on the y-axis, our months going across the x-axis, and then we'll still have our coarse and fine texture, and then we have explained at the bottom which of the actual series these represent. But what we see is that initially, when we have started out our growing season, this soluble pool of phosphorus tended to be fairly low as the percentage that it encompassed of the total phosphorus. And then over the growing season, we saw that increase until about September. And then for most of our sites, we would see that start to come back down after the crops had finished being produced or drying down to be harvested. The iron-bound phosphorus was an interesting fraction for us because what we were seeing is that we were seeing this increase in iron-bound phosphorus. And one of the things, especially with biosolids and the production of biosolids and the treatment plant itself, is iron's added during the treatment process at our facilities that we work with to help with some gas production during the digestion. And as a result, there ends up being additional iron that we believe is in the biosolids that has to get tied up, or can tie up additional phosphorus. Again, so another one, so the occluded phosphorus, we're seeing that we have these changes taking place over our growing season, primarily due to changes in redox conditions from the water content of our systems, and then it comes back after the end of the growing season when irrigation stops. Our calcium-bound phosphates, we didn't really see a lot of change, and this is one pool that we really weren't expecting to see a whole lot of change taking place, primarily due to the large concentration of calcium phosphates in our parent material for most of these soils are derived from. So a little bit on the organic pools that we had. So we had the labile organic pool that we looked at, and we see that we have a decreased concentration initially during our growing season, and for most of them it starts out high and drops down. So we believe due to two factors, one being that there is some labile organic phosphorus that's present in the bile salts when it was applied, but also we're going to have the labile organic phosphorus that was present in the system from the decomposition and the phosphorus that was available from the fallow period prior to it. The moderately labile pool, which is a pool of phosphorus that's not as available as our initial labile pool, and we saw very little changes. Some work that was just accepted and was released online was looking at some of the half-life abilities for the transformation from labile to moderately labile, showing it takes about a year for that transformation to take place. And being that our study was over a smaller time period, supports that we're not seeing that change taking place. This is something that if we probably had gone out for multiple years on this site, we may start seeing that change. But within our time frame, that's really not making much of a difference. So the fulvic acid pool of phosphorus is a pool that's associated with plant biomass. And so this is a pool of phosphorus that we're going to have that's going to be increased in change with root exudates and biological activity within the soil and decomposition of organic matter. And so we also are speculating on this one as well that our biosolids probably did contain some fulvic acid associated phosphorus. And then we also had that background pool of it initially in the soil that then started going through the transformations during the growing season. And then we start seeing from July through the end of the year, where that end of our season, where that pool starts coming up again. Primarily what we're expecting was that it was due to the changes in organic content in the soil and the organic matter and the microbial and biological driven processes of the root exudates. One of the ones that was a little bit surprising to us that we were to see changes in was this non-labile pool. And so this one should be our most stable organic phosphorus pool. And it should be slower to turn over, but what we did see was there's this slight bounces in it and slight changes in it. But one of the things to keep in mind is that this one's scale is much smaller. We're only seeing a 1-2% change in this concentration, and therefore we don't think that it's as much of an issue. It may have come down to some of the difference in our compositing of samples and the actual samples where they're collected within the field. So just a few of the conclusions that we have so far from looking at just the irrigated portions of this study is that it seems to be that there is a lot of biological activity that's taking place that's influencing how these pools cycle and the activities that are taking place, be it from the root exudates and the changes of the actual plants growing in the microenvironments that the roots create in the plant respiration. Change in soil redox effects, so again, seeing with the iron fraction where we and the occluded fractions changing. And part of that was due to not only were these soils under irrigation, but the year that we were doing our sampling for this was a much higher rainfall than average. And then the non-equilibrium effects, where all these pools are in constant flux with each other and with the other elements that are in the system. And that as they change, there's been a lot of work that's been done that shows that none of these pools really ever reach their true equilibrium values and are constantly in flux, which is where we think we're seeing those changes taking place during the growing season. So with that, I'd like to thank you and thank our funding agencies, the cities of Littleton and Englewood Wastewater Treatment, and also the City of Denver Wastewater Reclamation District. So thank you, and might have a minute for a question. So we haven't finished. The question was about how different crops would affect this cycling. One of the things that we are looking at, and I haven't finished going through all the data for it, is we did a similar study, companion study with this one, under dryland wheat conditions. And so we have that for under full production systems, and we also have it under very managed research settings. And so we've seen some similar results to it. It's a little bit different, and part of that I think is due primarily not to the plants but due to the difference in water content, which is kind of complicating our results. In our area, there's not many people that grow irrigated wheat, and so to be able to compare between the irrigation schemes, we're a little bit limited.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.